This segment of the Outpost On Demand podcast is brought to you by Gordo's Cheese Dip. Are you a dipper? Get dipping America with Gordo's Cheese Dip. Every outdoorsman knows that before you head out to the woods or water, the first thing you do is to get your gear together. The next thing on your list is to pack up all your food. So while you're enjoying life in the great outdoors, don't forget to pick up America's number one cheese dip, Gordo's. Gordo's Cheese Dip, now in six delicious flavors. Available in the deli section of your local area Walmart or your favorite grocery store today. Get dipping America with Gordo's Cheese Dip.
The Outpost Radio on Demand. Here's Art Young from the Outpost Magazine.
If you're not pumped about pork after we finish this chat, I will be surprised. Hi, I'm Art Young, and I'm the editor of the Outpost Magazine. And one of the things I like about my job is that sometimes I get to talk about great food with some of the best chefs in the country. And today is no exception. Our guest has joined us before, and he's back to talk about his new cookbook, Pure Pork Awesomeness, Totally Cookable Recipes from Around the World. Atlanta chef Kevin Gillespie, welcome back to the Outpost.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, is it fair to say you're sharing your brazen love of pig in this new book, Kevin?
I think that's absolutely accurate. It's certainly an homage to my favorite ingredient.
Well, I got to ask the question, because you answered it in the preface, why do pigs have such big snouts?
Well, you know, pigs are built to sort of burrow and sniff out the things that they want to eat. So those big snouts help along that process. They're much better at it than we kind of give them credit for. We probably should be using pigs to track down people instead of bloodhounds, if I had to guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. And kind of an interesting image, too. Some pigs walking around the airport saying, "Wait a minute, what's in that bag, buddy? What's in that bag?"
I think that'd be kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah, I do too. Now, tell me, in as serious as we can be, because this is a wonderful, amazing book, why did you choose pork for an entire book?
Well, it's interesting. I felt like pork was something that was being kind of underrepresented on the market right now. I mean, there are plenty of chefs who love it, but I think for the mainline consumer in the grocery store, they still look at pork as this kind of thing that you buy it when it's on sale, but otherwise people aren't that excited about it, and I felt like that was just such a travesty considering how much the world looks at pork as being their favorite thing they could possibly cook with.
And you've got an interesting organization of this book, and it's like the pig by Cuts.
Yes.
I think that's a genius.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it seemed to me that when I was kind of coming up with some ideas for this and I was walking around the grocery store, one of the things I noticed was all of the kind of the crazy names that they give to so many different parts of the animal. And I thought to myself, I bet a lot of people are kind of scared of using it because they don't even know what these things mean. They look at shoulder butt, Boston butt, picnic ham, and they go like, what's the difference? They don't even realize that they're all from the same cut of the animal. And so I felt like organizing it by cut was going to give people a little bit more clarity on a good place to start.
Yeah, it is fascinating, and it really helps a lot for those of us who are not professional chefs and who just like to cook once in a while. You include some really good guides to the breeds of pig and the different cooking, you know, methods. How does a breed change the preparation of pork?
Well, a huge, huge difference. I mean, when you're looking at pork, for example, there was what we used to do and what we do now. And that's kind of why we put that in there, is that for many, many years, the varieties of pigs that we used and the way that the pigs were sort of brought up or raised produced an animal that was much fattier and much more flavorful. And then as time went on and with the influence of the poultry industry, frankly, on the market, we began to make pigs much more lean. And unfortunately, starting with one versus the other will affect the end result tremendously. I mean, it's the difference between playing peewee football and playing professional football. I think it's one of those things that inherently the game is largely the same, but there's so much added nuance to it on the higher level. And so I wanted to kind of break down some of those terms that people aren't sure what they mean. When you hear people talk about heritage animals or heirloom this or old world so-and-so or all natural, like what did those actually mean? And that seemed to me maybe the first part in writing a book about a single subject was to try to give somebody a little bit of education so that when they went to the store, they knew what to look for in the first place.
Are there parts of the pig that are more difficult to prepare than others?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that the part of the pig that's the most challenging is also the most commonly used. The pork loin and tenderloin, which are the hands down the highest selling portion of a pig, especially as far as the grocery store is concerned, are also the most difficult to prepare. And so I think people have been actually setting themselves up for failure for a long time when they go to the store and they buy that package of pork tenderloins, and they look very manageable because they're small, when in turn it actually is very difficult to cook a pork tenderloin the right way because of how lean and delicate the meat is.
Now, I used to hear from my grandmother or somebody that there was a potential health challenge with pork, trichinosis, or I can't
right.
remember all the...
Yeah, trichinosis is the major one that most people are concerned about. And for many, many years, that was why you always heard people say, you have to cook them well done. And there was certainly a time and a place for that. But the reality of it is that trichinosis is a largely wiped out concern. Trichinosis has not disappeared, but for all intents and purposes, it's not something that we need to be concerned with. The last reported incident of someone actually getting sick and dying from trichinosis is, you know, we're pushing 100 years on that. So it's been a long time. And it has a lot more to do with the way the animals are raised than it does a problem that is inherent to pigs. Pigs in a feedlot, in a confinement scenario, under very unsanitary conditions, are much more prone to trichinosis. The reality is that if you're buying your pork at the farmer's market from people that are raising these heritage animals, as I advocate that you should try to do, that becomes a concern that is almost just non-existent for you.
Interesting. Another myth busted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the completely unconfined pig is the feral hog.
Yeah.
And they are pretty much the scourge of the outdoors. They destroy hundreds of millions of dollars of wild game habitat and water sources. And I've always thought that if someone, and I think you're the guy, Kevin, could find a delicious way to prepare feral hogs for the table, that would go a long way towards bringing this population under control.
I bet it would. You know, it's interesting. I'm actually an avid outdoorsman and sportsman. My family are all avid hunters, and I was brought up to believe that most of the food on the table should be something that you went out and you got yourself. And my family has to deal with it all the time. I mean, I don't even want to tell you how many pigs we took off of my grandfather's land last year. It just seems like there's an infinite quantity of them. And I've cooked them every which way and have tried to come up with a lot of ways that work. And it is a challenge. You know, the major issue being that the boars themselves is just simply too much testosterone, and it kind of spoils the flavor of the meat. Now, I've had a lot more success with the sows, but you always have to remember that this is a gamier meat, and so approaching it the exact same way you would a domesticated pig is actually not the way to deal with it. I actually think that if you employ techniques that are more similar to what people think of with venison or maybe even lamb, you end up with a much better result.
Interesting. So if someone's out there harvesting these feral hogs, what the biggest tip is to do what?
Well, there's a couple things. One is drawing a lot of that the iodine and blood out of the meat. So that means properly allowing these to hang and letting that excess blood drain out of the animals. That can be done by a butcher, by your cooler near you. You know, take them to the same place you do deer, like the locker, and let them hang. If you can't do that, if that's not an access point to you, then deboning the meat and actually allowing that meat to brine or to sit in water will help draw a lot of that blood out of it and changing that water. It's similar to kind of what we do when we're working with liver and things like that. We're trying to draw sort of those impurities out by brining it, as it were, sort of in a very light salt water solution. That helps a lot. And then using techniques and flavors that are meant to complement wild game as opposed to domesticated pork. So that means things are a little bit more bold. I've had really great results with rosemary and chilies and garlic and juniper berries and red wine and all of those things. And those are maybe a little bit more what we think of, again, like I said, when we're talking about the flavors that you would use if you're cooking venison or lamb or mutton. And that's the way that people need to approach wild feral pigs, is that's really wild game and it has its own set of principles. And that's why in this book we don't really add any wild feral pig into it, because in truth that goes in a different book entirely.
Yeah, and I think there's a market for that book as well if you ever want to write it.
I do too. I you know, actually that was something that I've been trying to convince my publishers for a while now, that I think that an approachable wild game book would be a really fun book to write. So maybe they'll let me do it.
Maybe they will. You know, you are known for incorporating fresh, organic, sustainable ingredients for all your dishes at your two Atlanta restaurants. One is The Gun Show and Revival, I think, are the two that
right,
I'm
exactly.
aware of. And congratulations on opening that one. I know that the Revival just opened. Have you incorporated the sustainable ingredients into the Pure Pork Awesomeness book?
Absolutely. You know, one of the first parts of that book is really talking about how people are going about finding their pork, you know, that not all pigs are created equal, as it were, and that sourcing a better quality pork will in turn produce a better quality end result. I think also in there we've given a lot of recipes that advocate seasonality, that use pork alongside other ingredients to sort of showcase their seasonality and emphasize the fact that the meat itself changes throughout the season. You know, that's one thing that I think people forget when they're talking about sustainability and seasonality in cooking, is that even meat is different during different times of the year. You know, that the animals exercise more or less during different times of the year, and so applications of the actual meat becomes different.
Well, you are clearly a fan favorite among the TV chefs, the people that have appeared on Top Chef. You've been a James Beard Foundation Rising Star Chef. Why do you think people like you so much, dude?
You know, I mean, I hope. My goal is that they like me because they realize that I'm a very real person, that I, you know, as much time as I may spend on television, I'm really never playing a character. I'm just me. And I think because I'm approachable, because I've never been in a situation when I didn't have a minute to stop and talk to someone on the street who was a fan of mine who wanted to come up. And, you know, I don't take that for granted. I feel like I've been very blessed in my career and in my personal life, and that it's all these people who buy my books, who listen to me speak, who come to my restaurants, that have really made my career what it is, and I try to give back to those people by being enthusiastic and, more than anything, by being myself. And I hope that that's the reason that they've, for whatever reason, found some connectivity with me.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I want to put you on the spot here, so what else is new, right? What is your favorite pork dish from Pure Pork Awesomeness?
You know what? You're not putting me on the spot by asking me that, because so many people do. The problem is that I've yet to form a clear answer, because I really love so many of them in there that it's difficult. I'll give you a couple as opposed to giving you a single one.
Great. Great.
One of my favorites is the Banoffee trifle. And so that is a funny dish that came about in a strange way, where I was trying to make another classic dessert, Banoffee pie, and I could never get the pie to come out right. And I ended up with this other very different thing that turned out to be amazing. And so Banoffee trifle is a layering of vanilla custard with fried bananas, chocolate ganache, butterscotch, and candied bacon. And it's just absolutely wonderful.
Oh,
I know. It's just,
God.
It's indulgent, but it is absolutely phenomenal.
You think
a little indulgent, not the heart healthy selection in the book.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, to contrast that, though, one of my other favorites is the Korean barbecued pork bulgogi. They're lettuce wraps, very light, very fresh, showing people how to do a little bit of a Korean-inspired dish, and Korean food is very popular right now, demystifying some of those ingredients, but also taking a cut, the pork shoulder, something that's rather unutilized, and showing you how to cook it really quickly. My favorite thing about that recipe is that it can be done in less than 20 minutes from start to finish. No shortcuts. It truly takes less than 20 minutes to prepare the whole dish, and you can feed a family of four for under $10.
That's a good one. That's a great one.
I think
one.
That's a great one, yeah.
Well, this is a wonderful book, my friend. I mean, our guest today has been Atlanta-based chef and restaurateur Kevin Gillespie, and he's written the go-to cookbook for selecting, cooking, and enjoying pork every which way. You can find the book at your local bookstore or Amazon.com. It's a beautifully designed book, great photography. Thank you again, Kevin, for joining us.
Thank you, Art. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm Art Young, pulling for pork. We'll talk soon.
The Outpost Radio On Demand, from the on-demand page of theoutpostlife.com.